All right, towards the top of 219, here is the plan. Odysseus says to his two servants, "Cease your weeping, lest someone should come outside and see us, and tell those who are within. When you go in, do so separately, not together. I will go first, and you follow afterwards. Let this, moreover, be the token between us. The suitors will all of them try to prevent me from getting hold of the bow and quiver. Do you, therefore, Eumaeus, place it in my hands when you are carrying it about, and tell the women to close the doors of their apartment. If they hear any groaning or uproar that sounds like men fighting, they must not come out. They must keep quiet and stay where they are at their work. And I charge you, Philoetius, to make fast the doors of the outer court and to bind them securely at once." When Odysseus had thus spoken, he went back to the house and took the seat that he left. Presently, the two servants followed him inside. At this moment, the bow was in the hands of Eurymachus, who was warming it by the fire. But even so, he could not string it, and he was greatly grieved. He heaved a deep sigh and said, "I grieve for myself and for us all. I grieve that I shall have to forego the marriage, but I do not care nearly so much about this, for there are many other women in Ithaca and elsewhere. What I feel most is the fact that our being so inferior to Odysseus in strength that we cannot string his bow. This will disgrace us in the eyes of those who are yet unborn." Remember that intro journal that we did that had all the statements and you had to agree or disagree? Remember that one phrase that was, "It's important to me to save face"?
Oh,
and
yeah.
We had to talk. That's what Eurymachus cares about here. Eurymachus cares about here. He doesn't want to look bad. He's like, yeah, it's a bummer that I can't marry Penelope. But even more so, people are going to say I'm a big wimp. He's worried about his reputation. Kind of strange, right? "It shall not be so, Eurymachus," said Antinous, "and you know it yourself. Today is the feast of Apollo throughout all the land. Who can string a bow on a day such as this? Put it off to the side. As for the axes, they can stay where they are, for no one's likely to come to the house and take them away. Let the cupbearer go round with his cups, that we may make our drink offerings, and drop this matter of the bow. We will tell Melanthius to bring us in some goats tomorrow, the best he has. We can then offer thigh bones to Apollo, the mighty archer, and again make trial of the bow, so as to bring the contest to an end." Antinous basically says, "Oh, wait, I forgot. Today's a feast day. Oops, my bad. We can't do this contest today. Let's have a party." What's he doing?
Wimping
out? He's stalling, yeah. He's buying time. He's afraid he's not going to be able to do it. "The rest of the suitors approved his words, and thereon men servants poured water over the hands of the guests, while pages filled the mixing bowls with wine and water and handed it round after giving every man his drink offering." Page 220. "Then, when they had made their offerings and had drunk each as much as he desired, Odysseus, still disguised as an old man, craftily said, 'Suitors of the illustrious queen, listen, that I may speak even as I am minded. I appeal more especially to Eurymachus and Antinous, who has just spoken with such reason. Cease your shooting for the present, and leave the matter to the gods. But in the morning, let heaven give victory to whom it will. For the moment, however, give me the bow, that I may prove the power of my hands among you all, and see whether I still have as much strength as I used to have, or whether travel and neglect have made an end of it." So Odysseus, in disguise, says, "Hey, good idea, let's have a feast, but just for kicks, just for fun, how about I give the bow a try?" This made the suitors very angry, for they feared he might actually string the bow. Antinous, therefore, rebuked him fiercely, saying, "Wretched creature, you have not so much as a grain of sense in your whole body. You ought to think yourself lucky just being allowed to dine unharmed among your betters, without having any smaller portions served to you than we others have had, and in being allowed to just hear our conversation. No other beggar or stranger has been allowed to hear what we say among ourselves. The wine must have been doing you a mischief, as it does with all those who drink immoderately. It was wine, in fact, that inflamed the centaur, Eurytion." I have a really hard time with the names in this paragraph, guys, just bear with me, please. "When he was staying with Perithous among the Lapithae. When the wine had gotten into his head, he went mad and did ill deeds about the house of Perithous. This angered the heroes who were there assembled. So they rushed at him and cut off his ears and nostrils. Then they dragged him through the doorway out of the house. So he went away, crazed, and bore the burden of his crime, bereft of understanding. Henceforth, therefore, there was war between mankind and the centaurs. But he brought it upon himself through his own drunkenness. In like manner, I can tell you that it will go hardly with you if you string the bow. You will find no mercy from anyone here, for we shall at once ship you off to King Echetus, who kills everyone that comes near him. You will never get away alive, so drink and keep quiet without getting into a quarrel with men younger than yourself. Antinous tells him, no way. Of course you don't get a turn. How dare you? You're just an old poor guy. You should be lucky we let you eat with us. Furthermore, you must be drunk. And then he threatens him. And he says, here's what happens to drunk people. So basically, sit down, shut up, and don't talk about the bow anymore. This Antinous, nice fellow?
No.
No. Penelope then spoke to him. Antinous, she said, it is not right that you should ill-treat any guest of Telemachus who comes to this house. If the stranger should prove strong enough to string the mighty bow of Odysseus, can you actually suppose that he would take me home with him and make me his wife? Even the man himself can have no such idea in his mind. None of you need let that disturb his feasting. It would be out of all reason. Queen Penelope, answered Eurymachus, we don't suppose this man will take you away with him. That's impossible. But we are afraid lest some of the baser sort, men or women among the Achaeans, should go gossiping about and say, these suitors are a feeble folk. They are paying court to the wife of a brave man, whose bow not one of them was able to string, yet a beggarly tramp came to the house, strung it at once, and sent an arrow through the iron. This is what he will be said, and it will be a scandal among us. Eurymachus, still caring about his reputation. Eurymachus, Penelope answered, people who persist in eating up the estate of a great chieftain and dishonoring his house must not expect others to think well of them. Ooh. I know it doesn't sound like it, but that was a big diss. Basically, she says, you think you have a good reputation after all you've been doing is living in my house and eating all my food? People already talk bad of you. I know it doesn't sound like it, but it is a huge diss. Penelope says, why then should you mind if men talk as you think they will? This stranger is strong and well built. He says, moreover, that he is of noble birth. So give him the bow. Let us see whether he can string it or not. I say, and it shall surely be, that if Apollo vouchsafes him the glory of stringing it, I will give him a cloak and shirt of good wear, with a javelin to keep off dogs and robbers, and a sharp sword. I will also give him sandals, and will see him sent safely wherever he wants to go. So Penelope says, let him try it. If he does it, I'll give him some prizes, and then that'll be that. It's not really for my hand in marriage. Then Telemachus said, mother, I am the only man either in Ithaca or in the islands that are over against Elis who has the right to let anyone have the bow or to refuse it. No one shall force me one way or the other, not even though I choose to make the stranger a present of the bow outright. Let him take it away with him. Go then, within the house, and busy yourself with your daily duties, your loom, your distaff, and the ordering of your servants. This bow is a man's matter, and mine above all others, for it is I who am master here. Telemachus chooses this moment to kind of, I guess, pull up his big boy panties and say, I'm the man here, mom, you should go inside. But really, he has ulterior motives. He wants to make sure his mom is safe, and he wants to make sure Odysseus's plan is carried out. Penelope went wandering back into the house and laid her son saying in her heart. Then going upstairs with her handmaids into her room, she mourned her dear husband till Athena sent sweet sleep over her eyelids. The swineherd, remember one of the loyal servants, then took up the bow and was all for taking it to Odysseus. But the suitors clamored at him from all parts of the cloisters. And one of them said, you idiot, where are you taking this bow? Are you out of your wits? If Apollo and the other gods will grant our prayer, your own boarhounds shall get you into some quiet little place and worry you to death. More threats? Eumaeus was frightened at this outcry they all raised, so he put the bow down then and there. But Telemachus shouted at him from the other side of the cloisters and threatened him, saying, Eumaeus, bring the bow on in spite of them, or young as I am, I will pelt you with stones back to the country, for I am the better man of the two. I wish I was as much stronger than all the suitors in the house as I am than you. I would soon send some of them off sick and sorry, for they mean mischief. So Telemachus kind of yells at Eumaeus, and it gets the suitors' minds distracted, and they're all laughing. And who has the bow now?
Odysseus.
Odysseus. Thus did he speak, and they all of them laughed heartily, which put them in a better humor with Telemachus. So Eumaeus brought the bow on and placed it in the hands of Odysseus. When he had done this, he called Eurycleia. Eurycleia is a servant, an old woman servant. He called her apart and said to her, Eurycleia, Telemachus says you are to close the doors of the women's apartments. If they hear any groaning or uproar that sounds like men fighting in the house, they are not to come out, but are to keep quiet and stay where they are at their work. This is the next part of the plan, right? Make sure the women are all safe. Top of 222. Eurycleia did as she was told and closed the doors of the women's apartments. Meanwhile, Philoetius, one of the loyal servants, slipped quietly out and made fast the gates of the outer court. There was a ship's cable of Byblus fiber lying in the gatehouse, so he made the gates fast with it, and then came in again, resuming the seat that he had left, keeping an eye on Odysseus, who had now gotten the bow in his hands, and was turning it every way about, and proving it all over, to see whether the worms had been eating into its two horns during his absence. Then would one turn towards his neighbor, saying, "This is some tricky old bow fancier. Either he's got one like it at home, or he wants to make one, in such workmanlike style does he handle it." Another suitor said, "I hope he may be no more successful in other things than he is likely to be in stringing this bow." But Odysseus, when he had taken it up and examined it all over, strung it as easily as a skilled bard strings a new peg of his lyre, and makes the twisted gut fast at both ends. Then he took it in his right hand to prove the string. Like he goes, pluck, pluck. And it sang sweetly under his touch like the twittering of a swallow. The suitors were dismayed and turned color as they heard it. At that moment, moreover, Zeus thundered loudly as a sign, and the heart of Odysseus rejoiced as he heard the omen that the son of scheming Cronus had sent him. He took an arrow that was lying upon the table, for those which the Achaeans were so shortly about to taste were all inside the quiver. He laid it on the centerpiece of the bow and drew the notch of the arrow and the string toward him, still seated on his seat. Keep those two pictures in mind. When he had taken aim, he let it fly, and the arrow pierced every one of the handle holes of the axes, from the first onwards till it had gone right through them and into the outer courtyard. Then he said to Telemachus, "Your guest has not disgraced you, Telemachus. I did not miss what I aimed at, and I was not long in stringing my bow. I am still strong, and not as the suitors twit me with being. Now, however, it is time for the Achaeans to prepare supper while there's still daylight, and then otherwise to disport themselves with song and dance, which are at the crowning ornaments of a banquet." As he spoke, he made a sign with his eyebrows, and Telemachus girded on his sword, grasped his spear, and stood armed beside his father's seat.